Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. We carry the largest in-stock selection of Hunter ceiling fans. They provide consistent comfort all year round and also help reduce energy costs. Right now, save big on Hunter ceiling fans when you shop at Menards. View our entire selection of Hunter ceiling fans today on Menards.com. Plus, our weekly flyer with plenty more great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker. Spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker. 100 degrees boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. Today is another special. Woo-hoo. Today is a conversation with Jamie Lang and Francis Ball. Oh no, it's not. It's just with Jamie Lang because Francis Ball didn't bother showing up.
I don't mind. I'll tell you why, because we got to know Jamie.
Jamie's great, isn't he?
What a fun podcast that was.
I do like Francis. I have to be honest with you. I did his podcast, Private Parts. And I do like him. But sod you, Francis.
No show
on the podcast.
Here's what might have happened. They might have been competing. Actually, we got to really know Jamie. So that was good.
It's actually true. It's worked out better because literally just the whole conversation with Jamie.
It's like a wind-up thing. You wind up and just go, and it just goes off and it's hilarious.
I genuinely could talk to Jamie for 2 or 3 hours. Yeah. In fact, I bumped into him a couple of times out and we just chat. When we meet, we just chat because we like conversation. And I find him a really interesting guy. And
you're both complete nutters.
Why I like Jamie so much is his honesty. I firmly believe I could ask him any question and he's confident enough, even though we have a whole conversation about insecurity and confidence and the thing, but he's confident enough to say, I'll give you the answer. Yeah. And he just does it. Okay, all right, let's meet him. This is, oh, by the way, it's so long, we split it into two parts. So, there'll be a gap in the middle and then we will go on to part two. We'll release them on the same day. But just
maybe I'll try and see if I can split it where he spilt his tea. Look out for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, let's do that. All right. All right, here's Jamie Lang.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, write into Dear Lovejoy.
Jamie, welcome to my kitchen. Thank you very much for coming. Where's Francis?
He's not here.
You promised both of them.
I know, I promised both, and he's not here. He's at his bottlers, which I don't even know what that means. He says he's in Tottenham at his bottlers, and so he's not here. And do you know what? This is what I said to you. I apologise to you and to the listeners, because I have a slight lisp going on, because I had a dentist appointment this morning, so I had a local or general anaesthetic. It's a local anaesthetic, yeah. in the mouth. And so it's now drooping. And so I came from that to come here because, yeah, I wanted to see you.
Thank you, Francis, Jamie.
I know, Matt.
He's let us down.
He's let us down.
So the first thing I was going to say to you is about your new podcast, which I'll get into a bit. But I was going to support Francis in you having a new partner in a podcast. But now, fuck him. I got you both a present. I'm not sure whether... Will you see Francis?
I'll see him at some point.
Okay, well, I bought you both a present. And I didn't know what to get you both. And this is... I've the new woke Tim. I bought this present, actually, for my last guest, but he rejected it because he had to go back to Denmark and couldn't take them on the plane with him. So I bought you both B-bombs. And what these are is their presents for... Because, you know, what do you buy someone like you, Jamie? You've got everything. You've got the world at your feet.
It's such a lie. I don't have...
I've watched the show. You've got everything.
So
this is... What you do is you plant these in your garden. Do you have a garden? Or do you live in a flat?
I have a communal garden.
Well, there you go. That's fine. You plant them. You throw them out. You'd have to do anything apart from throw them out. And then they attract bees. So you're saving the environment
they're handmade in Dorset.
So it's a present for us all. I've given you a present for Chelsea. Do you live in the Chelsea area?
I live in the Chelsea area.
So you can put them out in your communal garden. The bees can come. Where does Francis live? Does he live out that way?
Yeah, and Francis also actually really loves bees. Do you know what the interesting thing? This is what I heard about bees the other day. So bees, this is so true. Yeah. So bees, firstly, have face recognition. So if you destroy a beehive,
yeah,
they will remember you for 3 days afterwards. So if you ever go back towards that place, the bees will attack you. That's first thing. Secondly, do you know why beekeepers smoke the bees out? Because firstly, what happens is that the bees go down because they think nest is on fire. Yeah. So they go down to go and eat all the honey. So they eat all the honey to go and save the honey to fly somewhere else. And then they come out, and when they see you, they can't sting you because their bellies are too full of honey. And so that's why you smoke them out, because they can't sting you and they kind of fly away from it.
Great facts there. Why do you know this?
I don't know why I know it.
I wanted to pick Francis up on his ridiculous fact.
He's a liar.
When I went on...
He's a liar. Timmy's a liar.
When I went on your Private Parts podcast, which I thoroughly enjoyed, by the way, when I went on there, it was a great conversation. He just came up with his fact, and he went, I've got a question for you. What animal can hold its breath the longest? And I went, well, it's got to be some sort of whale or something. Yeah. Underwater. And he went, no, it's a sloth. Was it a sloth?
Yeah, it's a sloth. And it's a lie.
Bullshit. And I went, so I had to agree because I was on the podcast and didn't have any way of Googling. And then I went back home, Googled it. I said it straight to me. Some whale.
The funny thing was, you didn't go back home. I received about 5 minutes after. So you literally thought about it in the back of your mind the whole way through. Then jumped in the car and said, I'm going to get that little fucker. Because I know he's not right.
It's absolute nonsense.
He said so many things. He said, because on our podcast, we do this question of the week. And, so yeah. and what happens is that we've done this podcast, you know, 140 times, whatever it is. He knows the format, but every single time he goes, oh yeah, sorry, I forgot about that bit. How can you forget about it? It's a weekly podcast. And we had James Argent from The Only Way Is Essex on. Yeah. So he came on our podcast. And the question was when The Only Way Is Essex started compared to Made in Chelsea started. Chelsea started way afterwards. Francis was adamant. He was adamant until the point where we had to Google it and he was wrong then. And then we had another guest on where Francis said, what is the average baseball used in the game? So baseball always swapped, right, in a baseball game. So what is the average baseball? How many times is it thrown? He was lying about that. Everything one is a total lie.
Well, so how much is it?
I think it's three times or something, or twice. He said it was like an average of 10.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Talking about these bees, are you worried about climate change at all? Is that something that bothers you?
It's definitely. Do I follow it a lot? You can't help but follow it now, right? Yeah. With all these things, and I think that it's amazing that the problem is I don't know enough about it. I don't research it.
Being a business owner, though, we'll talk about your suites later. But does the carbon footprint of your company come into it at all?
Yeah, massively. The biggest thing that we get at the moment is, can you remove plastic?
Yeah.
And why can't you remove plastic from your packaging? And it's like all these things, it's much easier said than actually done, because it's really hard. What we have in our packaging is it's the best kind of plastic that you can possibly use. So it's not this like crap stuff that they just throw away and stuff like that. So it's all these different things that we use within it. But to change our packaging to not use plastic is firstly highly expensive. Yeah. We looked at doing cardboard. And cardboard doesn't package the same way. It's really expensive too. We wanted to do glass. Glass is...
We better just point out for anyone who doesn't know, you've got your sweet brand, which is called Candy Kittens.
Yeah, and, which is called Candy Kittens. So we're a vegan sweet company. And we started about 8 years ago. And we actually, it was completely by accident, if I'm honest. We were 21 and 22 years old. I was 22. I just started a TV show called Made in Chelsea. And I wanted to create a business at the same time. And I love sweets. And we... Try and Google how to make sweets. I mean, nothing comes up. We had no idea what we're doing.
What are they made of?
So I actually did stand up the other night, and don't do this joke in front of a room. There were about 10 girls in the front row, and I tried to do stand up. And I came on stage and I gave out some sweets at the beginning. And I said, hi guys, this is my sweet company, just trying to butter you up. And they went, oh, nice. And I went, oh, and they're vegan. And someone went, well, what do we swap the gelatin for? And I panicked and said, Rohypnol.
Christ!
Yeah. From that moment on, it was downhill. And then what made it even worse? Hey,
I'm surprised I didn't hit the mail on.
I know. And then what made it even worse? Yeah. What made it even worse was that I said, oh, this is my second time, as you can tell, doing stand-up. And I got a cab from here to the Comedy Store, and I said to the lovely taxi driver, can I recite my routine to you? And he went, yeah, go on lad. And I said, and he had an accent like that because obviously he's working class, and that went down like a shitstorm as well. Turns out it's not that funny to talk about Rohypnol or working class, especially if you're a privileged white guy.
I mean, how did you get on?
It was fine. You know, it was interesting. It's standard. The thing is, you know, Tim, you're probably saying, I quite like challenging myself in different ways, whatever it is. And so I like being on stage. I did it at university. I did those kind of things. So I quite like being up then. I quite like entertaining. And it's a challenge. I mean, it's only for 10 minutes, which is a long time. But at the same time, it's kind of like fun to give
it
a go.
Did you get any laughs?
Got a few laughs.
Right.
Yeah. But the problem was...
Second time you've done it, isn't it?
Second time.
Yeah.
The problem was is that I'm quite good at telling stories.
Yeah.
And the first time I ever did it, I just got up and told my stories, right? And that was quite funny because I know my stories.
Yeah.
The second time I did it, I try to be smart and I try to make jokes and I try to be a comedian and I'm not a comedian. And so it worked-ish, but it was like I was a funny presenter rather than being a comedian.
Will there be a third time?
Yeah, but I would go back to just telling stories. I'm never going to be a comedian. I'm never going to go, you know, you've had the likes of Tom Allen on your show. Yeah. Those guys, firstly, I think it's discredit to the kind of trade of being, you know, I've already been a reality star and people don't like me for that. I don't want to then go and shit on the comedy circuit as well by saying, hey, I'm a stand-up comic, because I just think you've got to really go for it.
Yeah, but you put the hours in, then you can do it, but you've got to put the hours in. No one just turns up and becomes a comic.
But some people do, you know, this is...
I don't think they do. They all bomb. And they all start off by getting a laugh and they go, this is it. They get addicted and then they bomb for it.
Yeah.
And then they come back and they get better and better because that's what happens.
I suppose I suppose what I think is wrong is that you see people who have a the reason why people didn't like reality stars, right, or don't like reality stars, is because reality stars are given a golden ticket into this wonderful world of entertainment for free. We haven't grafted for it. We don't supposedly have a talent. We're not a musician. We're not an actor. We haven't gone to drama schools. We haven't been a runner on shows or producer or things like you did. You know, we just given it, right? And I think that's an unfair jump into the industry. So people, because they're taking jobs away from us, it's unfair, they think that. And I kind of see that. And I find it unfair when reality stars say, right, well, now I'm a singer. And because you have an audience, they just try and go and do it. And then they get frustrated that they're not respected within the industry. But you kind of, I understand why they're kind of not, is because they haven't grafted and haven't sort of worked at that trade.
I went to the TV Choice Awards not so long ago, a couple of weeks ago or something. And what I found really interesting about it was the biggest stars there now. Used to go to these things, it'd be June Whitfield there and Terry Wogan or something, right? Now it's...
Love Island.
It's Love Island. It's Love Island, Made in Chelsea, and The Only Way is Essex. The three biggest shows, right? And the reason why they're the biggest shows is they're the ones which make the Daily Mail online. You guys are the ones they love. And so you get the column inches. And you know the way award ceremonies work is the award ceremony... you pay to go there and win the award. The papers love it. The TV Choice, no one buys that magazine, do they? But the awards are important to the industry. So it's kind of like, well, they do buy that magazine, but it's like, you know, so it becomes high profile for that. And then, so everyone's helping out each other, but I don't have a value, whereas you do, because the press aren't interested in writing stories about me, yet they're really interested in writing stories about you.
Yes, but I also think that the issue with that, which a lot of people don't realise, is that you definitely, unless you grind and work hard, you have a shelf life, like all these things. You're a marketing tool, right? So you're used as an advert. You invite these people and these people and these people with these things because it's going to make the headlines.
Yeah.
But how long does that last for? It doesn't last that long. But, you know, you look at people...
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the industry, the traditional industry doesn't like you because they're like, hey, you're stealing our jobs, but you're working for it. Now, I remember years ago, people forget this, but I remember when Jonathan Ross and Chris Evans started working on TV and I wanted to be a TV presenter, so I was coming up on their coattails. People were going, these guys don't have a talent. They can't sing and dance, because just before, the generation before that, with Bruce Forsyth and stuff like that, they'd done the Butlin circuit, the cabaret circuit, you know, the holiday camps and stuff like that, so they had a talent. And then these guys came up, like Jonathan Ross and Chris Evans, and all they could do is talk, right? They were brilliant presenters. That's what I wanted. Then my generation comes up going, well, I'll be like them. The next generation comes up with reality stars and the YouTube stars.
Yeah, yeah.
And our industry's going, oh, they've got no talent. Yes, you have. You're just coming into it from a different angle.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a completely different way of doing it. But then once you've got the opportunity, then you've got to bust your balls to stay there.
Totally. That's it. Listen, I was going to say I have got immense talent. Wow, I have loads. But it's true. I think it doesn't matter what generation you are. There are always people who are up and coming who you think, well, they're not like this, or they're not like that, and they're not the traditional route. That always happens, and whatever it is, it doesn't matter if you're selling sweets where suddenly the people aren't using gelatine. What the hell, you idiots? You're not using gelatine. Why wouldn't you ever use gelatine? And there's always rogue sort of shapers and movers within an industry. And those are YouTubers and reality stars at the moment. And soon enough, there'll be something else. You know, you look at sportsmen at the moment. You know, you've got these sports guys. In America, for example, people are really worried about the sports industry because children, kids, aren't going to NBA games or NFL games or baseball games because it's really expensive. And they prefer to watch esports. They prefer to watch people playing basketball on a PlayStation.
Yeah, or, esports are huge.
So they don't want to go and watch live sports. They want to watch esports. So the sports industry are going, shit, what is going to happen to us? But it's like the same thing. I always say this. It's the reason why, you know, you would have had this. You used to get in taxis, you know, probably like a year ago. And they used to say, you know, Tim, do you use those bloody Ubers? Do you use Ubers? And you probably had the conversation, come on, you stick with us black cabbies. And I get that. And I fully respect the cabbies. And I'm all for it because it's British and we were here and it's Londoners and they have to do their knowledge and all these different things. But the problem is that in industries like this, there's always movers. And you have to, you can't just tread water, you have to swim. And if you tread water, you're going to drown at one point. And you have to always adapt and move with whatever's happening. Otherwise, you kind of get lost, I think.
So do you feel that once you're in this industry, you've now trying your hand at everything to keep going? What is your job title?
Oh, God, I don't know.
By the way, I've got to say, I said this on your podcast. You presented the show with me and I thought you were brilliant. Oh. You're really good. But one of the things you've got going for you is you're nice. You're kind, you're nice, and you're confident. And I think that's half the battle. People like nice people. And you're not nervous. So you know, that's
yeah,
always
good. Yeah, I think I'm a sort of insecure guy, but I kind of am. It's so funny, I've spoken about this to you. I have therapy like once a week just because I think the self-awareness is really important. And it's really weird because I am insecure about certain things, but I'm super confident in other ways. I can stand up and do stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, I spoke to a friend, he said, well, you can't pay him £1 million to do that. But I go, well, why? Why wouldn't you do that? But then in other areas, I can be insecure, which people go, well, why would we be insecure about that? Which is a weird one. But for me, what I always want to do, I remember when I started, when I got offered Made in Chelsea, I spoke to a lady called Sophie Tanner Lang, who is head of Endemol, and her son is a great friend of mine, a guy called Alex. And I said to her, I said, can you make me a presenter? She said, Jamie, there's no way. I said, why? She said, because you're white, you're posh. Who are you going to relate to? You're unrelatable. And this is when I was about 19 years old. And I said, okay. And then another year later, I came back and said, come on, I want to go and enter. I want to do something. He said, Jamie, go and be a producer. Go and be a runner. I can get you on these different things. I went, oh, I don't really want to do that. And then it came to about 21 and Made in Chelsea was going around and my friend started doing the first series and she said, and I went back and said, well, I've been offered this reality show. She said, don't do it. I said, absolutely don't do it. It'll be the death of you. And I went, what? Yeah. She said this and said, don't do it. And I said, okay. And I went and did it. And I remember I was in her place in France and I remember I was umming and ahhing to all these producers. I was like, oh God, do I want to do it? I just don't know. And I had the choice either be going into something called Welbeck Group, which was a wealth management company. Mm. And how I got the job is I told the guy a joke in the interview.
Nice.
And he liked it. I said, this is no one of a lie. Had the interview, he kind of liked me. I had a 2-2 from Leeds for theatre and performance. I mean, I was unemployable.
Right.
And I could talk, right? And that was about it. And he said, oh, go on, tell me a joke, Jamie. And I went, all right. And at the end of it, I said, what do you call Postman Pat once he retired? I went, what? I went, Pat.
Yeah.
He found it hilarious.
It's a crap gag.
It's the shittest
one. And you think you should be doing stand-up?
Yeah. So that kind of happened. So then I always wanted to kind of be a sort of an entertainer in some sort of, but I didn't want to go and become an actor. I didn't want to be an actor, but I've always wanted to take a shortcut into things. And what I realize now is that you can't take shortcuts.
No.
You can't. And I thought you could before.
No.
Because I suppose, if I'm totally honest with you, you know, if I wanted to go on holiday, my parents said, well, go and get a job. And if I kind of ummed and ahed, they gave me the money to do it. Mm. And it was always that thing. So I always kind of found a way of doing things. Bill, I think it's Bill Gates always says that, says, I'd hire a lazy person over a hardworking person because the lazy person will find the quickest way of completing the job. Or something like that, which is just a ridiculous saying, but he said that.
Right.
So I thought, well, that's right. And then what I realized in this industry that you cannot take shortcuts. And in the life, you can't take shortcuts anymore. You can do it when you're young because you can kind of get through. But when things become serious, you really can't. And you actually have to work hard and grind it in order to make things work.
Can I unpack a couple of things with you? First thing is confidence. You have the ability to go up to a woman at Endemol, who's, I know it's a friend's mum, and talk to people and say, I want to be a TV presenter. I want to do this. And you seem to have, you just said you're insecure, but you have an abundance of confidence, I think. And I think most of the people who come on from Made in Chelsea on my show, they're always brilliant, by the way. I've got to say this, anyone listening, that Made in Chelsea people turn up, they always deliver because they're always not nervous in front of the camera. Yeah. So they're confident. What breeds that confidence? Is it your upbringing from where you guys are all from? And
I do you know what I think it's down to? It's down to boarding school. Most of us were sent to boarding school, and most of us at the age of 8 years old. So you're thrown into an environment where you have to make friends to survive. You know, when I was 8 years old, I was taken to boarding school,
yeah.
and I wasn't really explained the concept of it. So at the end of the day, my mum wasn't there, and I was like, "What the fuck?" And I was given a number 237. I was like, "Am I in prison?" And then I slept next to this guy called Pelham Groom.
How old were you?
I was 8.
Jesus,
it's crazy.
You sat next to someone called what?
I sat next to a guy called Pelham Groom, who
wow.
Pelham, who I mean, this guy. We had our beds next to each other in this dormitory of like 15 people. And I woke up, and he woke up in the middle of the night and went, "Mommy!" And I was like, "What is this place?" It was just bizarre. But because of that, firstly, you had to make friends. So you're thrown yeah. into those environments. So you have to interact. That's the first thing. Secondly, you had to do things like, you had to go and do speeches in front of the school. So you'd go and stand up and do speeches in front of the school. People said, "Well, what musical instrument would you like to do?" And you said, "Oh, I'd like to play the recorder." So you'd go and play the recorder and you'd play that in front of the school. And so from 8 years old, I was used to being put in front of people where you would have to entertain or you'd have to do something or you would have to, I would have to be good at something. For me, you know, mine was never, I was never good at working. I was never intelligent enough. I'm a smart guy, but I was never intelligent enough. So my brother was this amazing guy he still is an amazing guy. He's the most intelligent person I know. He went to Oxford and got, you know, did university there, classics, all these different things. But he was always the one who was really respected because he had that education there. He was always smart. So I had to find what I was good at. So I'd always trying to find areas where I could entertain or do something or be noticed. And I think that's what gave the confidence.
I think that's brilliant though, because I went to just a normal comprehensive school, and I think many of my listeners will be listening to this going, thinking they would have never had to stand up in front of a school. I'm looking at Mark there. You went to a normal, normal comprehensive school. Did you ever have to stand up in front of the class? You'd never have to stand up in front of the school. I think it's a good thing to get kids to do, because I'd be mortified with the idea, and I still would be standing up front. I'm great in front of cameras, but you put me in front of a school. So I think it's great for building confidence.
It really is. And I think that's what, you know, I remember going to university and I went, like I said, I went to Leeds and did theatre performance. I remember being, out of 80 people, there was about 4 of us who went to private school. And I remember having conversations with people saying, "We're in the same place, we're at the same university, what the hell did your school need that you paid for?" And I remember thinking, shit, I don't know.
your parents are even worse. Yeah, what did you do with that education?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. But now, looking back on it, I understand what it did. And it gives you inner confidence. And I don't think that's purposely done. But it, not only does it give you inner confidence, it also gives you the ability to find something that you're good at,
right.
Whether that's sport or music or drama. You know, you go to the States, because my cousin's headmaster of a school in, you know, I can't remember, it's in like South London, and it's a state school. And some of the classrooms has 44 kids in it.
Yeah.
44 kids. How, you know, one of the kids is not working hard at school, they're just left by the side. And this is what I find troubling about the educational system, is that there are some, it's like the sports industry, some kids could be amazing, but they're not noticed because you have no idea what's going on in their home life, you don't know what's happening to them, you know, in terms of they're being bullied, you don't know. And they could just be a quiet kid, and you think they're quiet, but you don't understand their issues. And because they're not performing well, they're kind of left by the side. And at my school, you weren't left.
Yes, yeah, true. As a society, we need to make sure we invest in our children.
I really think so.
That is for sure. Did you enjoy the experience of boarding school?
I hated it.
Did you?
I really hated it, yeah. Because I didn't want to leave my mum.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was an anxious kid anyway. I just think I was born anxious. And I used to be like, I remember this time when, I remember watching, did you ever see The Land Before Time? Do you remember, like, Sharptooth? It's basically, it's like
dinosaurs,
a, it's
yeah,
a cartoon sort of show about dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I do remember it. Yeah, yeah,
and things like that. I remember watching that and thinking, the only thing I remember thinking about it was, if all the dinosaurs are dead, does that mean they're in heaven? Because if I go to heaven, there's going to be dinosaurs there. I don't want to go to heaven. So I went down to my mum and I said, Mum, are dinosaurs in heaven? She said, yes, they are, darling. Of course they are. And I went, well, that's shit. I don't want to die and go. So I was always kind of worried about these things. And I didn't like boarding school because I don't know. Were you a frustrated kid or did you overthink stuff?
I do now, yeah. I'm not sure when I was a kid. I was just like kind of...
just like, okay.
All I wanted to do was play football and sport. That's all I did was play sport. I mean, from the moment I got out, all I wanted to do, play football. We played a lot of basketball in my school, a bit of cricket and stuff like that. And we just, that's all we did.
Yeah, see, that's football. Great. And that's your distraction. And for me, I had that, right?
Mm.
But I remember I would come home when I was at my, before boarding school, so I went to Hatherwick Castle School, so from 4 to 8, whatever it was. I remember just being frustrated. It was really weird. And I think it's because I had older sisters. So I have two older steps, half-sisters, who were, when I was younger, they over 10, so 12 years older than me for my dad's first marriage. And they would have like friends over and they were smoking up in the attic and they were drinking. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to be able to. So I was always frustrated. And then going to boarding school, you're told to wake up at this time. You're told to eat at this time. You're told to do your work at this time. You're told to sleep at this time. You're told you can't go to the bathroom after 10 at night. And if you do, you have to have a reason. And I was like, it's like, you know, what the hell is going on? It's archaic. You can't do that. And I was just constantly, and so I was always getting in trouble as well.
Would you send your kids to boarding school?
If I can, because it's like, you know, if you send your kid to Eton now, £45,000 per kid for a year. That's, you have to earn 90 grand a year. After, like, that's like,
after tax.
Tax, yeah.
So, yeah,
just to send a kid for 1 year. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
I would, just because of, but I wouldn't send them to boarding school. I would send them to a private school if I can until they're about 14 and then allow them to make the choice.
All right.
Rather than doing
okay, it. Okay, so to unpack the other bit that I was going to talk to you about is the thing that you've brought up a couple of times in this interview, and when Made in Chelsea first went on, people didn't like the guys going on. Were you in the first ever series?
I didn't do it. I decided not to do it.
So you joined in the second series?
Yeah, because I was too scared to do it. It was about posh kids being followed with a camera.
So they got hammered.
Hammered?
Do you remember? They got hammered. Absolutely hammered. Because the only way is Essex was on, and everyone's like, oh, look at the cheeky chappies down there. And then you lot came on, and it was like, look at all the posh kids with their privilege.
Yeah.
Why are they on TV and stuff like that? And then everyone warmed. But do you not think that you spend the whole of it, because you've said it a few times, oh, posh white kid or whatever. Is that a disadvantage to you sometimes?
Oh, my God, massively. Yeah, it's such a disadvantage because
it's not a disadvantage in what you've had.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So,
but disadvantage in.
Yeah, I mean, I'm massively privileged in the sense where you know, I had a good family life. I was able to go on holidays. You know, I went to a private educated school. All that. So in terms of that, it's super privileged, and in lots of ways, in terms of the sort of corporate world, it's massively helpful because there are a lot of connections and a lot of this and a lot of that. If you go into the sort of media world, which it really isn't, and in life it really isn't, because firstly, we're 0.1% of the population in terms of who went to private educated schools, right? That's the first thing. Secondly, people, you know, people don't really like the fact that they think that we are just kids who are given a lot of money and we don't really work or do anything. And it's not frustrating at all because, you know, it's good. You know, it's hard in terms of business as well, because every single time I have a conversation with someone about my business or you give panels, the questions I'll always get that come up are, firstly, yes, but you had a huge marketing platform in terms of Made of Chelsea. And the second one in is, yeah, but you also had loads of money so you could go and do it. And one is half doing the other end. My parents never gave me any money. They really didn't in terms of that, because, you know, my dad, you know, he inherited a lot of money, and he also had two divorces, and he's had 6 kids, and he's, you know, has a business. He had a couple of, you know, things. He hasn't done, you know, lots of things. And there's something in which is called the third generation curse, which is from riches to rags. So basically, grandfather makes the money, a father maintains it, son loses
so,
it.
So it's the McVitie's, wasn't it?
Yeah, the McVitie's thing, right. So we started McVitie's, but we sold it in the 90s to, right. or 80s, late 80s, 90s, to United Biscuits. And so people still think that I'm a billionaire. And it's like, what? They still think I'm heir to this fortune, which I've never seen any of this money. So, but at the same time, you know, I don't mind being criticized, or I don't mind the fact that people think that I have certain things, because I've lived a very blessed life in so many different ways. And someone once told me, they sort of said, if your name was in a barrel of other names, would you pick it back out? And I said, yes, I would. And that shows, and a lot of people probably wouldn't. A lot of people have, you know, done TV shows where, did a TV show called Famous, Rich and Hungry for the BBC, where I lived with two different families, one from Croydon and one from Sheffield, who basically lived off £1.50 for food a day. And they were single parents. And wow, that's tough. That is really quite tough. And so you can imagine these guys come home from their really tough day where they don't really have any food, and they switch on the telly and they watch E4 and they see these 18-year-old kids driving Ferraris. You'd think, fuck them.
Yeah, but did you have any idea people were living like that?
No, not when I was not okay, when I was younger.
So this begs the question, because at the moment there seems to, you know, people are sharpening sharpening everything basically at privilege and definitely at private schools because of the Cameron, Osborne, sure. Boris Johnson, Gove, Jacob Rees-Mogg, because they're all running the ship at the moment, and it's with Brexit, it's a nightmare. They're going, how come another Eton guy's gone in there? And then people are asking the question, do they actually know what's happening? And I wonder if Boris Johnson does know people are living off £1.50.
It's impossible not to know that now, for sure. But I think that when you are, you know, the tricky thing about, not tricky thing, but the thing about sort of private educated kids is that you live in a bubble. Right? You live, you know, from 8 years old until 18 years old, depending on what you do. You live in a school which everything is done for you, from your socks to your, you know, lunches, everything's done for you. So there's lots of disadvantages to it. Firstly, you don't really, unless you're interested and unless you want to know, and unless you are invested in politics and the world outside of it, you don't know anything, because why would you? You're surrounded by the same people all the time. You don't leave apart from every 4 weekends to go on an exeat where you get to go home, and you go home, and if you're over 16, you're going to go home and try and chase girls, because that's all you want to do. And if you're under that, you're just going to probably go to the cinema. So right. you don't experience anything. And the only time you really experience anything is when you go to university. And you go to university and you're suddenly surrounded. First, you realize that you think you're the coolest kid, and you're definitely not the coolest kid, because you're in a pool of everyone who thinks they're cool.
Yeah.
Secondly, you suddenly realize that there's a whole world out there. And that's what I also get. You know, I speak to... I have a friend of mine at the moment, my girlfriend's friend, who she lived in Solid Ground, she did all the different things, and she's just broken up with her boyfriend, and she's like, oh, but I've been with him 7 years. And I'm like, but there's a whole world out there. Really go and experience it. And people live in these bubbles. And it's not just, you know, private educated bubbles, but there's bubbles all over the place where the people don't really like to escape them, because they're quite
happy. Yeah, everyone does that. Yeah,
everyone
does it. They get in their bubble.
And I think it's so important to burst your bubble.
Yeah.
And to go and you know, when you came on the podcast, you said what's so interesting. You said that you are now so eager to learn and get knowledge.
Definitely.
You love that, right?
Yeah.
And I'm the same as you now, because when you were younger, all you did was play sport.
Yeah.
It's all you cared about. When I was younger, all I cared about was playing sport, pretty much, and chasing girls. And that lasted until I was like 29, you know, and suddenly you go, shit, I wish I could communicate with someone else from a different language, or communicate with someone who talks about neurology or someone, but I just can't, because I don't have the knowledge. And that now frustrates me, because I didn't burst my bubbles when I was younger. I just didn't, because why would I? I was happy where I was. My life was fine. Why would I want to change that? And I encourage so many people out there to actually go and change and invest and actually, you know, think outside the box and go and read stuff and do
but
different
also
things.
Find out what everybody else is up to as well. Like this conversation I'm having with you here is interesting, because, you know, I cannot imagine being taken away from my mother at 8 years old and what that must feel like to you to do. But a lot of people just go, oh, he's privileged. And it's like, what? Yeah. But he was taken away from his mother and then put in all these rules and law. Like you say, going to prison. It's bizarre. So it's nice to know what actually happens when you.
Interesting about it is the fact that, yes, privilege in a sense, but I didn't know anyone else. So I didn't realize that no one else didn't have a tennis court. I didn't realize that. Like, do you know what I mean? It sounds bizarre. It sounds bizarre. Yeah. Right? It does. We lived in the countryside with my dad was there, my mum. We had a tennis court. And I remember going to a friend of mine called Tom Dukenfield. Okay, and Tom Dukenfield was my best friend when I was younger. And I remember going there, and I remember going to his house, and he didn't have a tennis court. And I remember thinking, that's odd. why would you? I didn't know that. I didn't read books. I watched Disney films. Yeah. And there was so many things that I just didn't understand that other people didn't have these things because I was just so used to it. So, and then being sent to boarding school, it's crazy. I didn't know I was privileged. You don't know, you're not taught that. You don't understand that you come from wealth or whatever it is. But then you went to boarding school and, you're separated from your parents. And what that does, it doesn't do it to all individuals, but it gives you the problem with abandonment. You know, when I was 8 years old, my parents got divorced. I was sent to boarding school. My nanny, who I had for 8 years, left us. We moved house to London. We moved to a house in London in Kensington, which is lovely, right? But I came from a big house in the countryside. And I remember looking at this house and I was saying, this is where we live. And I remember looking and going, oh, it's quite small. Because I did, yeah, quite small. And she went, oh, and it was only half of the building because obviously it was a townhouse. Right. And I thought it was the whole building. And I still thought that was small. So it was a huge shock. Yeah. And a lot of people didn't realize is that when you're a kid, right, your roots are going into the ground, right, and you're learning about all these different things and you grow as a tree. So what happens to you as a child is so important. Until the age of like 14, it's really important. And to be separated from your family and to be told this and told that. And also, as I said, I was always told I was a bad kid because I was naughty. So there's all these things. You should never blame the child. You should always blame the behavior now. So you shouldn't say... You shouldn't say, you're a bad kid. You say, listen, kicking a football at a window isn't a good idea because it's going to smash. You're not a bad child. You just made a mistake, right? And I was always told these things. So growing up, I was this like frustrated. And I didn't know anything. I was confused and didn't know stuff.
You're very honest, aren't you now?
Well, I think it's funny though, because I think it's so important to be honest, right? Because we live in this world of like filters and just people talking shit.
Yeah.
This is why I started Private Parts, is because I was like, why is everyone just lying about, you know, the skeletons that they have in their closet and things like that? And I was just like, be totally honest about all these different things. And also, I think it's unfair to not be honest, especially coming from the sort of background that I had. You know, I can be honest about anything. I think being honest is important. Because a lot of people sit there and they worry about how they're going to come across.
What do the Made in Chelsea families think about their children being on the show?
My parents didn't like it at the beginning. They still don't like it, to be honest. I don't know why I did that.
Are they proud of your career?
I was a douchebag until I was like, I'm not kidding. Until I was 27, I was a wanker. And I didn't realise that. I look at like YouTube clips and I'm like, God, you're a tosser. Like, I was because I think, okay, where, you know, I was 21 years old.
Yeah.
I just come out of university and they said, go and do this TV show. And in some ways I became famous and I became famous. Weirdly.
You're hugely famous. I remember seeing you once. I didn't know you at the time and you were in the King's Road. Because you're striking, because your hair and everything, colour and all that sort of, you can recognise you. And people just were staring at you. It was like, this guy, it was a hype when it really went out.
There was this huge hype.
It's hard to be famous, though, to begin with.
Well, it's hard, especially if you're 21 years old and you like drinking and you like going partying and all these different things.
And you get the attention.
Yeah. So I was 21 years old, I became famous, and I was offered like $1,500-$2,000 to go to nightclubs and basically kiss girls and and drink. And I was like, this is epic. Yeah. So I went and did that. And you're on this sort of, you know, drunk fuel journey where you are, oh my God, you're just wonderful. You're great. All these different things. And you suddenly, I remember I was 27 years old and I had missed a couple of Christmases with my mum. I went on holiday instead with friends. because I thought, why would they care? I just didn't. Why would my mum care if I wasn't for Christmas? I mean, who gives a shit? And so I'd rejected all of that, and my priorities were just totally out of the way. And I was 27 years old, and I remember sitting in my apartment. I was about to go on an away trip to the south of France to film Ellen Chelsea for whatever season it was. And I remember sitting there and just going, God, who do I phone right now? Because I can't. Who do I phone? I don't really know who to phone because I don't really have anyone. Because all my friends were people that I got drunk with. And all of my friends who are my real friends, I'd neglected because they weren't on the show with me. And I remember thinking, God, this is really not good. And I suddenly had to have a big turning point in my life where I suddenly went, God, I've just been a bit of a douchebag. And I was never mean. I was never nasty. I was never horrible. I was nice to absolutely everyone. And I had a really good work ethic. But my priorities weren't there. So someone would say, do you want to come to my birthday party? And I'd say, oh, I've got something better to do. I wouldn't say that, but that's what I would have. Yeah, oh, I can't do it. Sorry. And I did that with my family. I did that with my friends. I did that with everyone. And I suddenly had to realize that actually, firstly, I'm not famous for doing anything. I've just been on a reality show. And secondly, I spent all this money that I was given on basically anxiety because I was just drinking so much. And my parents just didn't really think I was a good kid.
Is it a problem being famous for nothing?
Yes, because it's embarrassing.
Okay.
It's embarrassing when people ask for a photo in a crowded place because people are going, why are you taking a photo of him? What's he done? And it's embarrassing. So you just go, oh God. And you feel like an imposter. And because I'm so conscious of people loving me, I want people to like me. So I was literally said, right, I've got to do things that you earn respect from. So create a business, start a podcast, do these different things. And so I've always had that work ethic to go and do different things because I thought, shit, I haven't really done anything to impress anyone.
All right. You never told us what sweets are made of and how are they? They're not Rohypnol, but what are they? How's the business going?
Business is going good. Business is going good, but business is hard. It's tricky.
What are they made out of?
They are made out of, they don't have any gelatin in them, so they're completely vegan. So they have E numbers, they have sugar in them and things like that, but they're natural fruit juices. They're made in Germany, which is like the sort of best place in the world to make. But do you know Percy Pigs?
Yeah.
Okay, Percy Pigs. So they're made in the same factory that Percy Pigs are made. And they're gluten-free, and they're the healthiest sweets that you can possibly eat. And we've done it for 8 years, and it's really exciting, and it's amazing, and it's the best thing that I ever done, but also it's a headache a lot of the time.
Why?
Because business is tricky, right? The sexy term at the moment is saying, oh, I'm an entrepreneur. That's a sexy term, right? And everyone looks at success and says, oh, people are successful if they have a lot of money. And that's really not success at all. And it's hard because, especially if you're selling a product, because supermarkets are under pressure at the moment. So they have to squeeze your margins. Your margins are totally squeezed. So it's hard to make a lot of money in terms of selling products. You are competing against the monsters in the industry, the Roundtrees, the Haribos, all these kind of cats who can throw whatever money they want at a new product to make it go. They buy shelf space, all these
things. Can
they
throw money at getting you off the shelves as well?
They can buy shelf space. So they can
stop you going on.
In theory, yes, they could. However, you know, now probably not. They couldn't now because we're sort of well known. You know,
established.
We're established, you know, company.
Do you just sell in Britain or do you sell?
We sell, yeah, over all over. So we're just launching in America. We're doing Saudi Arabia at the moment. But, you know, you have to remember, a lot of these things, right, is this is what someone told me once. It's so important. And I always remember. And for some reason, I remember these little things. Someone said to me once when I was about 20 years old, he said, Jamie, because I always wanted to start saying, I never understood the concept of making someone else a success. I was like, well, why would I go and do that for someone else if I can do it myself? I used to answer back at teachers. So, but why? I didn't understand why they were always right and I was wrong. I didn't get that, which is just a douchebag at school.
Yeah.
But so I always want to start something. Someone said to me, well, Jamie, this is the most important thing you have to remember, that if you're starting a business or starting a brand, don't follow logic. And I went, what do you mean? He said, well, if you're going to follow logic, he said to me, if you're going to park a car, fly a plane, or drive a speedboat, right, follow logic. because it gets you back in the same place as everybody else, a place where you want to be. If you're setting up a brand, setting up a business, don't follow logic, because it's going to get you back in the same place as everybody else, a place where you don't want to be. You don't want to be the same as everybody else, because you get lost with the fishes, right? So I went, okay, so we started our sweet company, and we went, okay, we're going to make them colorful. We're going to make them gluten-free. We're going to make them more expensive than any other sweet on the market. You know, we did all these things by accident because we went, oh, let's just change it. And because we did that, we created an industry almost by mistake, which is gourmet gummy candy, which wasn't there before, which was a higher priced candy thing. And so we've been building that for years. But, you know, problem is that you're also 21, 22, and you go into Waitrose and they go, we love the product. And you go, great. And they go, okay, well, we're going to give you this. And they give you a price point, and that's impossible to change. So you're stuck with that. And you know, it's hard because margins are what can break a company or make a company. And so we've had to raise lots of money. We've had to give away equity. And especially at the beginning of a business, right? The cheapest thing in the world at the beginning of a business is equity. You give away equity, it's cheap. It doesn't cost you anything. But then when you start growing, you go, God, I wish I could have that back. It's like Zuckerberg, who got the guy to paint his office, you know, and he said, oh, I can't afford to pay you, but I'll give you some shares in Facebook. Sold those shares for like 250 million.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? Just because he painted his office. You know, and so, and people don't realize that. So there are so many mistakes we made at the beginning, but we are in a great position.
Who chooses the flavors? Mate, oh, they're weird flavors, aren't they? You sent me some. I ate some and I gave them to my, they're delicious, by the way. And I gave them to my kids who were so excited about it because they're really Instagrammable.
Yeah, that's the whole point. Well, you know, we realized that Instagram was growing and people were taking photos of stuff, so we made them look really pretty.
Like peach fizz. Is that one of the flavors?
Yeah, so peach fizz is one of them, which is peach. We've got apple and we had apple and apple. We had eat a mess. We have tropical mango. We have watermelon. We have strawberry. Mm. We have blueberry. And we pick the flavors. We do everything.
How do you get the flavors though? Do you have to sit in an office with all the...
So our German factory, which who are amazing, they have a basically like a mixologist person, right, who comes up with these flavors. And what's so interesting about our sweets is that, so every other sweet out there says real fruit juice, right?
Yeah.
And that will actually be just orange juice and apple juice concentrate. It won't actually be the actual flavor. Our ones, if they say they got blueberry, there'll be blueberry juice in it.
Right.
Or if it says, and no other sweet does that in the entire world.
When I posted it up on Instagram and I said, oh, Jamie sent me these sweets as I do for my friends. Yeah. And then everyone just comes to go, peach fizz is my favorite. Dodo is my favorite. And it's really interesting that idea that people then have a brand loyalty to a flavor.
Totally.
It's so bizarre, that whole thing.
But totally right. You have this with, you know, you have it with Sunday brunch, right? You have a loyalty of, from your viewers, right? And because it's a brand, it's a business, right? It's there. And that's the most important thing that you want to create in the business world. That's why I find it troubling when you see these influencers out there, or a lot of reality stars, or just anyone in general, who post, I'm selling this jumper, I'm doing this, I'm selling that, I'm selling this.
Yeah, you've got to like the product.
Because then what do you stand for? And if you stand for nothing, you fall for anything.
Yeah.
And so you have to, that's why we're talking about the Defiant Ones, for which we spoke about that documentary, which is amazing, right? Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, all about Beats headphones. But Dr. Dre never sold anything. He never did anything. He just loved his music and that was it. And then Jimmy Iovine said, well, let's do these headphones. And he went, yeah, sounds great. It actually connected with him. And I think that's so important that you need to have that.
When I was at the NFL on Sunday, this will go out a couple of weeks, so it was a few weeks ago, I was at White Hart Lane. What's it called now? Spurs Stadium or something, it's called. Great stadium, by the way. But I was there, and then halfway through the game or in the third quarter or something, these women came down, and actually men as well, dressed in an outfit, and they all started handing out your sweets, mini packets of your sweets.
Yeah.
Is that what... it was really good because I knew I was interviewing you, and I thought, I wonder what the thought process behind giving away free product is. Do you think we were going to take that and go, I need to buy some more of these? What happened?
Do you know what we do each year? We do £30,000 worth of sampling, free sampling. That's what we do.
So that'll be that.
That will be that. Maybe more, actually. I think we maybe double that. I can't remember what it is. But we do a huge amount, because what is so important is for people to try our stuff. Because Tim, you go into car phone warehouse, right? What are you going to buy?
A phone.
Okay, you're going to buy a phone, but what type of phone are you
going to
buy?
Apple.
Yeah, why Apple?
Because BlackBerry don't do it anymore.
Yeah, because BlackBerry. But you, exactly, you go in there. But if someone said to you, "Oh my God, okay," if you went to Carphone Warehouse right now and someone said to you, "But the Samsung phone is way better than the Apple phone."
Yeah.
What do you want?
Apple. The bastards have tied me in with the music. Yeah, exactly. And everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so you connect to that. So for us, you go into Waitrose or Tesco's or Sainsbury's, and for 15 years, you've gone up to the sweet counter confectionery, and you've gone wine gums. You go, how do you swap?
Okay, good.
How do you make someone go, actually, no, I'm going to pick Candy Kittens? The only way you do it is that unless someone said to you, "We're going to give you a free Samsung phone, you're going to try it out." You go, "Great, I'll try it out."
All right, let's try something out then, because the dudes from Karma Bites, I don't know what Karma Bites is, but they've sent me some products, and because I've got you here, I thought I'd say this. These are Karma Bites. Is made from popped lotus seeds, and is packed with goodness, taste, and healthy karma in every bite. I understand people eat lotus seeds in Asia, so they brought them over here. These are a great source of protein, low in fat, and have mineral-rich properties. Karma Bites are made by carefully extracting the seeds from the lotus flower, part of the water lily family. The seeds are then dried and popped. Treasured for centuries in the East, these seeds are valued for their nutritional and healing properties in both Chinese medicine. Right, we've got some flavors here, so let's try them. Let's give them a break here. You've got either coconut and vanilla, Himalayan pink salt, caramel.
So these are lotus seeds?
Or wasabi, or peri-peri. Which one do you want to try?
Should we try peri-peri or sea salt? Should we go for
these? You try peri-peri and I'll try...
Oh, what?
I'll try coconut and vanilla and we'll see what they're like. What? Mark wants wasabi. There you go. Okay. So
there's a company called Grub as well, which.
So these are Karma Bites. They are. Oh look, they're big, fluffy. Oh, I quite like them. Oh yeah.
No, they can't be that. Surely not.
What are you saying? They can't be what?
You use the seeds of the lotus flower to help keep mind and body in harmony. Wow. I mean they.
Holy, the only ingredients in the one I'm eating is popped lotus seeds, virgin coconut oil, coconut milk, coconut sugar, vanilla and salt. It doesn't seem to be... What are yours like?
Let's do a little swapsy around.
Where?
Spicy.
Oh, they're good. The red ones. What are the red ones?
Yeah, they're peri-peri ones. What?
What are we thinking?
I quite like... Also, they're pretty healthy. But I just don't know...
100 calories per bag, gluten-free.
But I'm just... My thing is that... Is it weird that we're eating lotus seeds? Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've never eaten them before. I like them.
Do you like them? Lotus seeds.
Lotus seeds.
Do you like them?
Yeah, I do.
I do. I like the peri-peri ones a lot. I like it. I think it's a... Oh, hello!
Don't worry. Jamie's just... Don't worry. Just speak.
Hold on!
Oh, it's on his phone. Hold on.
Jamie's
just...
So,
whoever sent me these from Karma Bites, well done, because you got a bit of promo there and they're pretty good. Okay, that's the end of part one of Jamie Lang. Thoroughly enjoyed that interview. Can we just say we are sponsored by Cooker? It's spelt Quicker, but pronounced Cooker. It's because it's from Holland, you know, 100 degree boiling hot water straight from your kitchen tap. It also does normal hot water, normal cold water. It does your filtered cold water, and it also does filtered sparkling water. Ooh. It's brilliant. I love it. It's in my kitchen. It's right there. We made brew with it. In fact, I made Jamie Lang a brew with it right here. Okay, so we will see you in part two.
I need to tell you about something, Tim.
Go on.
Beer 52.
Beer 52?
Absolutely.
Go on then, tell us about that.
Beer52.com. They are a beer subscription service. They provide really interesting beers from all around the world. And our listeners can get a free case of beer. That's 8 cans of really interesting beer, a snack and a magazine. If you go to beer52.com/lovejoy, you pay £5.95 for postage and packaging. And you get some great beers. And you can unsubscribe at any time. You're not tied down to anything at all. So check that out. We love it a lot.
Oh, it's great when you get that knock at the door.
Every time
it should
I'm around
be a 52.
Here. Every time I'm around here and there's a knock at the door, I'm hoping to God it's them.
Be a 52. All right, we'll see you in part two of Jamie Lang.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.